Innovate Gang Podcast, episode 371. I am Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
And Phil Wilson.
Hello.
How you guys doing?
Good.
Good, good, good.
It's great. What's going on in your world, Steve?
Well, I am I'm doing a bunch of technology stuff. I'm actually thinking about launching something that I'll probably talk about in the next couple months.
And wow, it's exciting. Does it have anything to do with a holodeck?
No, there's no holodeck involved. No, it has to do with screencasts and a site and yada yada yada. So we'll see what happens.
Good
there.
For you.
But anyway.
So who went to the Amazon Splash event?
It was me. I went to that.
Oh, okay.
So you're right. Going to everything these days.
Well, I'm just trying to, wanted to see what was going on in the world of, tech hiring with Amazon expanding here. I think he had like 40 jobs available in the area. So, and I guess they're moving into that god-awful ugly building that Code 42 is in now. So,
oh, really?
Hey, your favorite place.
God, but you put a link here in the show notes about the jobs.
The jobs.
There's a lot. That's a lot of jobs.
It looks like it's all, pretty much, fulfillment type software development and, robotics and that sort of thing. It's one of those, I went to the event and, again, far too many white guys, and got to do better at that. But, it was, interesting that they're working on all the robot work of the, the interesting stuff there, but it's difficult when you sit and you look about the evolution of jobs and you think, okay, well, these are 40 jobs to create the technology that will replace hundreds of jobs. It's basically because it's really designing and working through automated fulfillment, trying to get things done without the use of human beings. And, they start the video up and there's the stereotypical line of Amazon with the boxes going through the conveyor, weaving their way through the conveyor belts. And there's like 10 people standing around in yellow vests and they're just standing around, not doing anything.
Yeah.
It's like, oh God, it's sort of disheartening. It's like, okay, so we're going to replace these jobs. So you really won't be creating any economy to actually buy the stuff we ship, but there you go. Such is the evolution of technology and innovation.
Well, what I was amazed by, though, is the types of jobs that were on here. So obviously a lot of software engineering jobs, some recruiting jobs and some quality management jobs and all that. But then there was one director, middle mile technology. Mm-hmm. And I haven't yet read through the job description, but there appears to be at least a handful of kind of unique jobs. Most of them are obviously distribution related, transportation technology, a few other things on site, medical representative, blah, blah, blah. But still, that's nice to see more jobs coming to the Twin Cities, especially tech jobs.
Yep, exactly. And so, Amazon is growing here, so that's great. And I would be remiss if I didn't say, BuzzFeed's hiring developers too. So if you know Python and
really
full stack developer, just let us know. So I can talk about somebody else's company, but put in the slide in the pitch for ours as well.
Well, actually, my bride on our walk this morning mentioned BuzzFeed. And we were talking about news and news organizations and the stuff. And I was asking her I've never asked you this. What apps do you use on your phone to read news? And we were talking about that. I said you ought to download the Phil's BuzzFeed News app and use that and all that. And she goes, well, I see articles all the time from BuzzFeed.
Yep.
I get links to stuff. And she goes, is BuzzFeed doing their own original articles?
Yep.
And I said, oh, no, they just steal everything with RSS feeds.
Yeah,
of course they do.
They're just curating. That's all they do.
They're just curating. Yeah. I said, one thing I don't see is I don't see BuzzFeed reporters, doing videos from war zones in Africa or something, but.
No, or Trump rallies because they've been banned. So.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. Well, BuzzFeed is one of the news organizations that's not allowed at a Trump rally. So, one of many, I might add. So, darn that truth getting in the way and everything.
Yeah, no kidding.
But we are growing in that area of more, more original content, but the BuzzFeed, the great thing about the BuzzFeed News app, though, is that we do also aggregate other information. We publish tweets from other organizations or posts and things like that, but and then build stories around that as well. So it's a sort of a collaborative sort of a thing. But anyway, enough of that. So we've got some new jobs coming in via Amazon, and obviously Target continues to hire. So there is a growth in the technology field here. But I would love to figure out more ways that we can get a more diverse workplace and a more diverse workforce in technology. But that, that's an ongoing discussion and a challenge that we've got to right or wrong. We did, years back.
Well, I wanted to. Oh, go ahead. You're going to say something.
No, I was just going to just kind of segue into the next piece, because we're such, a lot of people don't realize how much of the internet started right here in Minnesota. So,
well, can I leap in on this one?
Because do leap in.
First off, I had actually read this article, but then I got an email from one of our listeners, Chuck Yeager, and I wanted to give Chuck a hat tip for sending in the link to this article as well. Because I think it's one of the best sort of forensically viewing article that I've ever read in terms of just a background on what happened. So for everyone listening, it's an article called The Rise and Fall of
The Gopher Protocol.
The Gopher Protocol. And basically, it's about something that was called Gopher, or is called Gopher. That was developed at the University of Minnesota back when the internet was not yet commercial, and there really wasn't any way to really organize information and find information. And they put together essentially what was kind of a hierarchical outline sort of method of finding content, but also to be able to search for content. And one of the key guys, Mark McCahill, was in his 30s, and he was working on this, and it became the primary way that a lot of universities were connecting with one another and publishing things and being able to find things. And you just wonder, after reading this article, how close it was to potentially being the World Wide Web, if you will. And how that, this could have morphed into something huge.
Well, Gopher and Lynx were sort of a combination of a web browser and a search engine,
Yeah.
And it was back when you could run such a thing on 10 Macintoshes, and it makes it just, a trip down memory lane for someone like us who use these. And I remember the first time that I saw Netscape, and it was still when it was in University of Illinois,
right?
And that the whole Mosaic browser, and that really kind of changed the game, because it made it more of a medium as opposed to browsing the web via some command line interface. That was the real genius of the web browser.
Well, you're absolutely right. And in fact, that was exactly the same sort of aha I had, because I remember delivering a report I had done. My company was one of two that did this big analysis of multimedia authoring systems for 3M. And the presentation was done 2 days before my son was born, 3 days before my son was born, the end of September of 1994. And at that point, the internet was not really something that I recommended or was even proposed. And even though I'd been kind of goofing with it, because I had an ISDN line from Mike O'Connor's GoFast.net over in St. Paul, and poking around with this, I was on the Whole Earth Electronic Link out in the Bay Area, and I was doing stuff with bulletin board systems, and all this stuff was left brain hierarchical kind of outlining command line sorts of activities, and it just didn't really cut it, because like I've said to people before, because people really pissed and moaned at the beginning about images being on the web, and just they were just a waste and all of that, and I said, hey, look, imagine you picked up a magazine and all it was text on a white page. That was it. But
remember back in those days, though, most of us were accessing the web via dial-up, so
right.
an image was rendered very slowly. So this slowed everything down. So that's why, you know, text-based websites were, you know, preferred in the on the early web.
Yeah.
And then as broadband, you know, kind of emerged, really after 2000, I would say, although we had broadband before then, it just wasn't that fast.
Yeah.
You know, I remember the first broadband that we got here when we moved here in 1998, it was, you know, just marginally better than what we were seeing with dial-up.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
But it was a good article, very long article, very detailed. It's good to see the history recorded.
Yeah, I thought it was fun to read.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. Well, Phil's getting reconnected with us. He had to. He had a little technical difficulty there for a moment, but
yes, I am. I'm back.
Oh, you're back.
Yay. Yes, I'm here.
Yay. But a tech company, App Data Room, is doubling their staff. Now, this is a company I've actually seen their technology. They have very nice interface that businesses can use to make it simple for their salespeople to be able to deliver PDFs and PowerPoint presentations, but to do it with obviously an interface that makes sense for that particular organization and so on. And I did not know in the article it said that Modus started inside This Clicks, which is now When I Work. Did you guys know that?
No, I did not.
No. Nope. Huh.
That was, I thought that was kind of interesting.
So a kind of a spinoff sort of thing.
Yeah. So this is, this is an interesting method to deliver that kind of content. Cause you know, having sold, you know, especially at the enterprise level, when you're sitting in front of a C-level executive and they ask you a question, you better know where to find the information and do it immediately. Right. And be able to show diagrams and logo explosion slides and, you know, these are all of our customers in your space and blah, blah, blah. And having a tool that lets you do that quickly is, I think, a big deal. But
good. So. It's always good to see a local company grow.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of growth, I did not even know about these guys. Co-working space Growth Lab is opening in Northeast Minneapolis.
I had to chuckle when I saw this one, because it's like if one of us decided to open a co-working space. Like if I said, I'm going to open a co-working space down here in Lakeville, you know?
Yeah.
He's a consultant, guy who's, I guess has his own space and is, renting it out to other people. It's only 2,300 square feet, so it's not going to hold a lot of people, but
yeah.
You know, it's yet another option for folks in the Minneapolis area.
The line used to be, you know, I got a barn, let's put on a show. Now it's, I got a barn, let's open a co-working space.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, everybody's getting into the co-working space. I'm wondering if downtown is building all of the apartment buildings and condos. So now they just like, okay, well, we're going to need to put these people somewhere to go to work. So let's give them a co-working
space. Well, but here's the thing. So we're chuckling about this, but let me just ask you guys a question. Cause this is what I thought about when I read this. Is it said, which he hopes will attract other freelancers and creative professionals. So now when I saw that, as I began to immediately went to, you know, people who are creatives or doing Photoshop work or InDesign layout or using Illustrator and they're actually creating, animations, or maybe they're doing 3D animation, or, you know, maybe they're videographers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And as I thought about that for just a moment, I thought, well, you know, in a way, when you think about Treehouse Health down by Loring Park, I mean, they're an incubator for health startups. Now, granted, these are mostly ones that they're investing in. But I began to think about what potentially could happen with vertically focused co-working facilities. And is that going to be the next phase, or is co-working not yet, entrenched enough
Would you consider that co-working then, if it's all in one vertical?
Well, it would be if you're all different companies or you're all different people that are in the space, and you're in healthcare or you're in architecture, mm-hmm. or you're in, you know, AI, that there's a co-working facility strictly for people who are in AI, artificial intelligence. I mean, I don't know, or maybe, you know, people who are doing gaming, there's a co-working facility for gaming only, you know, that kind of thing. So I don't know.
I don't know either.
We'll see. This seems to be a he got his own space. It's bigger than he needs, and he's looking to split the rent with some people.
Yeah,
that's what I took away.
Call it a co-working space.
Well, it's at the end of the article. It says, you know, Coco has a 1,300 or 13,000 square foot location, you know, down the street, yep. And you know the. Right. Let's see. There's another one that's opening at 7,500, and this guy's got a 2,300 square foot,
right?
You know, co-working space. So.
Yep. Yep.
Put it into perspective.
Yep, exactly.
Well, we have to ask if Tim, if you're going to be participating, but the overnight, overnight the website challenge.
Weird. Yeah, I need to look into it. It's coming up the middle of October.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird timing. So I hope that, you know, enough people sign up for this, but you know, it's the same thing that they've done. They're not doing it at the same time or the same weekend or near the same weekends like they've done other ones. They've cut out some of the gamification of it, so there won't be as much of the competition element to it. It's mm-hmm. just, you know, more focused on doing good things for local nonprofits that need websites. Yeah. Right. So which is good. It's kind of getting back to the roots.
Right.
Yep.
And now, you know, Ginger Buckland just sort of took over as the director of that foundation.
She's, she did.
Yeah. I think she still has her, she's still doing her agency, which was Cimarron Winter. Her and a partner did that. But I think that, she was very excited. I think I ran into her at a demo and she's telling me about that. And so she's now back in charge of the overnight website challenge and all the things that foundation does. So hopefully there'll be great things coming up.
Nice.
Yep. Well, I think they want to grow, obviously, the website challenge goes.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's some other good tech stories that happened this past week. One of the things that affected my family members, some of my family members, was the Delta Airlines tech meltdown. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Lord.
What? Nice.
Threw a lot of people into a tailspin, as it were.
So, yeah.
But you know, obviously things like this happen, but at the same time, it really does point to that aging infrastructure of the technology that kind of drives our air transportation world and how old it is, based in the 60s and 70s, and you know that's the ongoing issue of do you rebuild or you just tack stuff on top of stuff. And I think years and years of tacking, you know, new technology on top of old technology, I think we're headed for a scrapping and starting over. So,
well, how would you do it now, though?
I don't know
today, because the reason that they're still using mainframes and old software is that it's fairly sturdy, even though this mm-hmm. week it didn't seem like that. And you can handle, you know, hundreds of thousands of concurrent transactions simultaneously. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's the real problem. So I replacing it with some sort of server farm and distributed software, I think that would cost a lot more than what they're paying now. So that's probably the reason why they have such old stuff.
Sure. Exactly.
Well, back in the late 90s, when I was at Apple, one of our largest customers here besides Mayo was Northwest Airlines. And mainly because the Mac early on was one of the first personal computers that allowed you to drive multiple monitors. And so they used those for their air traffic control, not air traffic control, for their...
reservations?
No, for the people that were doing turbulence tracking and things of that nature, so that they could warn pilots of pockets of turbulence and stuff like that. And so they would have maps on one monitor, and then they would have the flights on another and the communications back and forth with the crew.
That'd be air traffic control, yeah.
Well, no. It's not air traffic. No, because this is something different. Air traffic control is controlling where they're going, and these people would be warning them about thunderstorms and stuff to watch out for. But anyway, the point is that there was an article that just came out. I tried to find it for today's show, but I couldn't find it. I'm still going to search for it and see if I can get in the show notes today. But it was an article about the current state of the air traffic control system and how some of the technology is still running on vacuum tubes. And it's not even solid state. And there's a company that they had to actually fire up the line again to make more tubes to keep this thing going. No, in all seriousness.
Wow.
And when I got done reading the articles, I wanted to share it with my wife, who flies a lot, but she has airline paranoia. I thought, this is the last thing I'm going to share with her. But it was really frightening when you read this thing. And you just, as I read this, I was thinking, this the air traffic control system's a house of cards. It's going to potentially, you know, they built in all these fail safes, but still, it's scary stuff.
Well, at the time of the merger, when Northwest was sucked into Delta, at the time, insiders were saying that the Delta technology was way, way older than the stuff that Northwest had. What happened this week, you have to wonder, did they keep the Delta stuff and throw the Northwest stuff out? I don't know. The story sort of hints in that direction, but it doesn't say for sure.
Yeah. Wow. Well, and the other big story this week, very big, was that Walmart rewrites its e-commerce strategy with that $3.3 billion deal for Jet.com.
Yeah, what a deal. Oh, I mean, this seems to be like the most horrendously large acqui-hire ever.
Yeah. So tell me, Tim, you follow the retail space very closely. So tell me about, is Jet.com really achieving success? Are they growing in a positive way? I mean, it's tough to compete against an Amazon.
Right. It's only been around. So here's the deal, and sort of why it makes sense for Walmart, is the Jet model, it's only been around for a year. It is gaining momentum, but it's still a money losing, thing.
Yep.
The management team has an interesting idea of how to compete with Amazon, but their whole model is they need to get their products as cheaply as possible, which is what Walmart does. Walmart has these because they the volume that they deal in, they have deals where they push on their suppliers very heavily to get the best price. So that's kind of what Jet needed to get to the next level.
Uh-huh.
And what Walmart needed is they needed to have some kind of successful e-commerce,
opportunity
division.
Yeah.
The stuff that they've done now competing with Amazon hasn't necessarily worked. So they really bought this because there is some technology that Jet has that would be good for them. Jet needs the kind of relationships to get the goods that Walmart has and Amazon to a certain degree has as well. But Walmart paid a premium to get these guys because they need the people.
Yeah.
So the management team, the CEO, that's what they bought for $3.3 billion. And all of them have long-term contracts with Walmart now. So it's not something that you're going to see in 3 years, these guys leave. These guys are going to be at Walmart for a long time.
Have you checked out the Jet? I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
Steve,
have
you checked out Jet.com?
Oh, yeah. Well,
it's really interesting. Those of you that haven't, if you haven't checked it out, it's very interesting because, I just clicked on a random item and this was a retractable Sharpie. And they're $32 for whatever the pack of 12 is, right? So the starting price on Jet.com is $29.13. Now, if you opt out of free returns on the items, you pay $28.90. Or you can get it for $28.69 if you pay by debit or credit card. Or debit card, you pay less, okay? Yep. Or if you opt out of free returns on this item and pay by debit card, you pay $28.47. That's kind of an interesting model. Basically, you're tearing off services to save money. So that's kind of interesting.
Well, and their entire raison d'être was to set themselves up as the Costco, the online Costco. To take the best from Amazon and the best from Costco's warehouse model and kind of merge the two together. And that was really their overall shift. They did a little bit of a pivot. That's pretty aggressive, but, in the link that we have in the show notes, If you watch the CNBC piece of the CEO of Jet and the CEO of Walmart talking to the reporter, I forget her name, you know, it's pretty clear that, you know, there's it makes an obvious amount of sense, but that Jet.com, like Amazon, just lost tons of money, you know, and is, you know, quite a ways away from being profitable.
Yeah. They needed an exit, and Walmart needed, you know, their management team and technology and approach and brand.
Right.
So it was good. It was good for both of them.
Yep.
It was a synergistic acquihire.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. But it's the multi-billion-dollar acquihire. Usually, yeah. You know, it's a, I don't know, $3 or $4 million here and there, and they hire the people and, you know, throw the whatever app or whatever, you know, down the toilet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I just found that an interesting story. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. Well, I stuck another one in here, and I always am a little bit cautious about doing that because the link that I put into this story, which is, will the Internet of Things be bigger than the Industrial Revolution, leads to two things. One is a link to Business Intelligence's Business Insider's intelligence report, right? So this is this article is all about hacking their report. But
right.
The reason that I put the link in here that I thought was interesting is the infographic that's in there.
Yeah, it's good. I don't believe, I think they're way too optimistic.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, I totally agree. And in fact, the thing that's been really interesting is I've been sort of, just on an ad hoc basis, I haven't really done, you know, tight analysis, but I've been kind of watching the throttling back of projections by, you know, everybody, Cisco and Gartner and all the various organizations that have been kind of throttling back. Because, you know, you start to read this stuff and it's like, the Internet of Things is going to save everything, and it's going to grow every economy by, you know, thousands and thousands of percent year over year.
Wait, it's not. Wait a minute.
Well, you know, we're seeing movement, but you know, this stuff always takes longer than you think.
Sure.
And so I just, yeah, like you guys, I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah.
So
optimistically optimistic.
Yeah.
About that. Well, we'll see. Check it out. It's a good infographic, but
it is.
Yeah, it might be a little robust. So,
but it's good. But it's good to keep an eye on what's going on and to understand what's going on, because it is materially going to change everything. And now people are also spinning the Internet of Things as being the primary reason that we're going to need artificial intelligence, and why the Amazon Echo and devices with Siri and Cortana from Microsoft and so on are really going to, and Google's approaches are really going to be the key to making all this stuff work, because we're not going to be able to do everything and configure everything manually. Right.
Right.
So there's just too many things and too many integrations and too many interactions, and it's just too much. So, anyway,
Well, let's take a look at this week in DOS. Excuse me, Microsoft. So,
this was actually a big one. Yeah. Who posted this?
It's gotta be Tim.
I did. Yeah.
It was a big one. So researchers uncovered a security key that's like 20 years old that protects Windows devices as they boot up, and it's been cracked.
Yep.
They found the cryptographic key, protecting something called Secure Boot. And I listened to this on the Security Now podcast, you know, that's done by the Twit network from, you know, Leo Laporte's network, and they really dug into it. And the more, and this is like super geeky podcast, so I don't necessarily recommend this for people who are not very technical, but when Steve Gibson really dug into it, I remember almost, I was walking by myself because my wife was out of town. I almost stopped in my tracks because it was like, holy crap, this is bad. And so this is going to be something that Microsoft's going to have to really take care of and do so in a really smart way, because otherwise it's just like Katie bar the door. Now, some people are also saying that it's probably likely that Microsoft put this in there intentionally to provide
A backdoor
for the government, which of course we know they've done in Skype. and so on. And that, but that was the original intent. And so if I put my tinfoil hat on right now, hang on a second.
Yeah.
Okay, my tinfoil hat's on. I believe it too. Now I've taken it off. Anyway. One other Microsoft story. I did not know anything about this. It's called Microsoft Flow.
Yeah, I didn't either. It's like an if then then that competitor. It does a similar kind of thing where you can pipeline workflows with apps and social networks and the like, just like IFTTT does.
Mm-hmm.
So whether or not this takes off is another story. But they have Android was the one that they introduced this week. So it debuted in April, apparently, with iOS. So you guys have had it for a while, but I'm just seeing it now on the Android side.
This is so funny because I literally, this totally went by me. I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, well, check it out.
Listen to I use every single week. You don't miss a thing.
I use IFTTT, so I'm not sure if I'm going to switch over, but it's interesting to see a big company taking this idea and implementing it. So
here's the question. I don't know if anybody listening to this podcast or you guys have used Zapier.
Nope.
One of the things that I had a client who did a lot of integrations to Salesforce and with other technologies, and we were doing things like using Zapier to when a WooCommerce order happened on their website, it would actually populate a spreadsheet with all the columns of all the data, and so that the accountant and the bookkeeper wouldn't have to get a login to the website and go in and find the orders and then export them and so on and so forth. It would all be in a Google spreadsheet they could share. And that was a Zapier integration.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, hey, that's cool. And then we started building all these Zapier integrations. We started doing various gravity forms to Salesforce through Zapier. And I was blown away by how great it was. But here's the kicker. The kicker is you really had to understand and document each one of these integrations and the processes, because the stuff wasn't simple. And that's what when I looked at this Microsoft Flow before the show started, I thought, this is what's a little bit more interesting than IFTTT about Microsoft Flow, is once you start to create these integrations, you've got a much better view into the processes that you've integrated with this than you would with IFTTT. And I thought, yeah, because Microsoft gets that part of it, the integrations piece. And so maybe that'll be their secret sauce.
Maybe.
So
I think a lot of companies would be, the CIOs would not want to build apps on top of IFTTT.
Oh, I agree.
Since it's kind of a side project, really geeky thing. So having a, officially supported Microsoft version of the same thing, I think would be attractive.
Yeah, I agree. So. And then the last big story was one that I was kind of surprised at. Have you heard of this new embedded operating system called Fuchsia from Google?
Yeah. It seems like it's one of these side projects. It's yet another operating system that sort of takes Chrome OS and Android and mixes them together in funny ways with a different user interface on top. And it runs embedded, on an embedded system. So I'm not sure how this is going to take off, what the long-term strategy is, because they clearly have, the mobile operating system with Android that's moving, more and more to the desktop, strangely enough. And then you've got, Chrome OS, which is basically, their Linux OS that's, based around the web browser. That has adherence as well. And Chrome OS is getting the ability little by little to run Android apps. And that comes in very handy and makes, the Chrome OS a lot more attractive to people like, students that need a few apps, but not necessarily, a full-blown PC. So this project appears to be kind of mixing the two together again on top of a Linux kernel, but in much more, you know, smaller, lower power equipment than what currently both Android and Chrome OS has.
Well, and that's why when I read this, as I thought, what a great Internet of Things operating system.
Yeah, it could be.
Because it is lightweight and it's low power. And
when you can run it on a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, I wonder if that's what they're
maybe
what they're going to be developing it for. All right. Well, now it's time for the cool thing of the week.
It's so true.
All right, Phil, you got to go first because yours is about poop.
Yes, just so I can bring the level of the podcast down even further than we've taken it before. You know, I thought I enjoyed this story. And again, I see a lot of this stuff, obviously, doing what I do. But the Poopening, I don't know if you've seen this on my Facebook feed. This is the Poopening, basically what happened to a Roomba owner. What happened overnight, the Roomba kicks into action every night at 1:30 in the morning, and they have a small puppy, and the puppy, pooped in the living room.
Oh.
And the Roomba picked up that poop and spread it all over the apartment.
What there's a drag.
There's an interesting link in Facebook. I'm always looking for something to talk about as far as a cool thing. And I came across this as I was searching for my cool thing. And I thought this was just too good to share. So here it is. It's the Poopening or the Poopocalypse or whatever they want to call it. So check it out.
Don't schedule your Roomba in the middle of the night.
Well, I don't know how you would avoid something like that, but because those accidents do happen, especially with puppies. So
yeah.
So I know I've changed the world with this cool thing of the week, haven't I?
You have.
You have.
Sorry. Anyway,
Mr.
somebody
Tim.
Elevate the cool thing, quick.
Okay, so mine is a yet another Raspberry Pi project. And you have to watch the video to get the full effect on the link, but it's basically a scaled-down version of the NES with a Raspberry Pi running, and it runs some emulation software so you can run NES games plus, you know, other later consoles as well. But it's a cool thing. It looks just like a mini version of the classic NES. And instead of like some of the other projects that take an actual NES and gut it and then stick the Raspberry Pi in, this is actually printed on a 3D printer, and it's condensed to be very small, the size of a Raspberry Pi. So it's actually like a quarter of the size of the original NES.
Oh, that's cute.
It is very cute. And the guy also 3D printed little cartridges.
Yeah. And 3D printed a little, looks like a little control.
Yeah, the controller is also.
Controller is very small.
Right.
Very, very small.
Yep.
So, fun.
So, yeah.
That is kind of cool. I got to tell you. Beats poop.
Well, leveraging the Android theme, I came across a Kickstarter project that these guys tried to raise $50,000. And as of this moment, over $2 million has been pledged.
Oh my God.
It's a product called the Superbook. Turn your smartphone into a laptop for $99. And so basically what it is, the Superbook is this shell, looks like a laptop, you know, the screen and so on. But you plug your Android phone into it, and it makes it into a laptop. There's an app that runs on it, and you're off and running. And you really got to watch the video to see what it does and how it works and so forth. But I thought this was, you know, Tim, I remember you, putting an article in, or maybe it was a cool thing of the week. I don't know about, or maybe this was a projection on your part about how we would be using our phones as full blown computers and being able to plug them into bigger displays.
Yeah. I've always wanted this kind of thing where, you know, we are carrying these little computers and having devices like this. And so the Atrix way back 5 years ago or 4 years ago, whenever that came out, that was an Android phone that you plugged into a dock like this, and it never took off. I like this idea. There's another one that's kicking around that's around the same price point. Maybe it's 150 that only works with Windows Phone, which I think is its big Achilles heel. Yeah. But it's the same idea, but it uses the Continuum feature of Windows Phone, which basically does turn it into not just a display, but it turns it into a like almost a fully blown Windows PC, which is cool. But it unfortunately runs on top of Windows Phone. This being on top of Android, I could see much more utility. It's $100, which makes it like
right.
Why would you not buy it?
Yeah, I know. I think I'm going to get one of these. You know, when they start selling, if they sell them for $100. You know, because it looks pretty good.
Well, I would love to have something like this for my iPhone. But then one would have to ask, would you even need an iPad?
True. Yeah, you probably wouldn't.
You probably wouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
That is a cool thing. That is the coolest thing of the week.
That is the coolest thing of the week. Easily.
Yeah.
Why, thanks.
It's 2 or 3 times as cool as what Phil and I brought to the table.
Okay, yeah. Well, you know, yeah. Superbook or poop, I mean, I don't know.
What if it's
there's only one new upcoming event that we've slid in here. It's Hacking IoT, Data Security in IoT on August 18th. And it's a IoT Fuse event. Yeah. They've rebranded the IoT Minneapolis group as an IoT Fuse group. And yeah.
Cool.
So there's a link in there to sign up if you want to go to that, because data security in IoT is huge. I mean, like everybody's buzzing about cybersecurity, and I'm on this. Actually, I'm on two LinkedIn groups about IoT, and I would say 40% of the discussion is around security. Yeah. So it's on everybody's radar screen.
Or the Tractor Works building, so that's kind of fun too. It's a new building that a lot of places don't have meetups, so that'd be great.
Yeah.
So I was just going to touch base with you. We were talking about Kickstarter there, and you and I have, I think Steve, you and I have invested in an Indiegogo campaign. Have you heard the latest on InstaMic?
I have.
Okay.
Did you get the? So InstaMic, for those listening, is a little teeny, a little bit bigger than a Matchbox microphone that you can connect up with your devices over Bluetooth, and the sound quality, according to the video that we watched before we bought
were younger men,
is incredibly incredibly awesome. And but there was just an update on InstaMic that looks like some of us may start to see that he wanted to add one more thing to it, and that some of us might start to see in October.
Yes. So. And I was just looking at the site, and I just noticed that this was funded. Do you remember the date?
God, last summer, wasn't it?
August of 2015. Yeah. It's coming up in a year now. So.
Yeah. And I want the thing.
And I got to tell you, you know, you guys gave me all sorts of crap about the Pebble. Pebble didn't take nearly this long.
Oh, I know.
So anyway, that's the downside of Kickstarter and Coco. You got to be patient. You got to wait, and maybe you'll see your money and maybe you won't, I guess. Right. So, well, there's a couple of things going on this week. I'm off to a couple of events. I'll talk to you about them next week on
the Minivate Gang podcast.
Have a good week.
Take care.
It's cold and old, the rain is falling, leaves are scattered all around. Fields that once were green and fruitful, now lie fallow, cold and brown. flying homeward.